Hey everybody, welcome to the 440 Guitar Podcast. I am your host, Jarrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can catch the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. You can follow the podcast on Instagram as well at the 440 Guitar Podcast. And if you have any questions, you can send me an email at the 440 podcast at gmail.com. You can also send me a voicemail at anchor.fm/440. Feel free to do that if you'd like to do so. And today, very excited to speak to this guest once again. Really dope musician, artist, songwriter, singer, and happy to have him back here at the 440. Charlie Treat, how you doing, man?
Good, man. How you been?
You know, I've been all right, man. I've been it's been an interesting year. I've had a lot of different opportunities working with a lot of artists via remote. And I've worked with some artists from Baltimore. I'm working with an artist from Chicago. Some folks out here in LA, but definitely I'm definitely grateful to collaborate with some musicians in general, but yeah, busier in a good way, I should say.
That's great to hear, man. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you again as well. How about on your side of the fence? What's going on with you?
Same old stuff, man. Just been pushing the music and working, and I got this record getting released about a week from now. No, 6 days from now. And so, yeah, just been doing the grind on that, music videos and, you know, release show and just all that stuff that goes along with releasing a record.
Definitely, definitely. And then, obviously, the last time we spoke, you came out with The Comet, you know, that didn't release too long ago. Are you still, when you're touring, are you still playing some tunes off of that album?
Yeah, it's kind of all the above right now. It depends on the band too. When I do the full band stuff, it's more the Comet stuff. Though we have been playing some of these new tunes, like full band style, not bluegrass. And we've even been doing, like, you know, I'll like rearrange like a Bill Monroe song or like a Flat and Scruggs song, and we'll turn it into like a soul song or a pop song. So the band is I don't know how reluctantly, but they've been letting me, like, they've been giving me the reins on doing that too.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yeah. And I think when we spoke, it was still like quarantine days, right? So during, you know, when it comes to making music now, I mean, how do you feel like your process has changed or if at all, I guess, do you kind of think through like songwriting differently or arrangements just with the time that we've all have gotten, you know, being isolated?
I mean, I definitely have been writing lots of like darker, more apocalyptic stuff, you know, but in terms of like, my process is still the same, and my process is never one way anyways. And truth be told, I think that people were leaning towards the internet, TikTok, Instagram, live stream world, pandemic or not.
I feel like a lot of, and then, you know, obviously I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I feel like that time that we had, and the way that we had it, I feel like a lot of musicians have almost been empowered in a way as far as being able to, you know, create something where maybe necessarily they don't have to be working with, you know, a Neve board or just the highest of highest event, where it's like, oh, like I can actually do some of this myself, you know, and empowering these musicians, you know, to kind of get creative, you know. I've kind of heard some stories where that's happened with a lot of folks. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, in fact, I started calling it like the quarantine sound. It was like all my buddies that played roots music and bluegrass and just whatever, like string music, were locked up in their houses and like learning how to sample drums and like learning 808 machines, and like all of a sudden, like a number of people were putting out like what I would just call folk music, but with like a pulse in it, you know. It was like this combination of like the electronic bedroom pop world and like the old time bluegrass folk world. And there ain't nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. I definitely would have to agree with you. I really am a fan of, you know, I was listening to a couple of your singles, you know, that you've released. And I really dig them. I know on Spotify, at least on my Spotify, Mama Hen is some of the more popular singles that you've put out since. And then Motor Motor, which I really like. I think Motor Motor might be one of my recent favorite singles that you've put out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate you listening.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it seems really contextualized too. You know, I mean, it seems like you got a pretty serious arrangement. Quite a few musicians. Obviously, I'm hearing some violin and potentially banjo and or fiddle, and you know, the rhythm section. I mean, I guess kind of talk to me as far as like how that stuff is, how like getting a sound like that seems to be so compressed and put together, and kind of making a record like that. Is it one of those things where it's just like, you know, you just hit up, you know, who can do those things, and they just knock it out? How much of it is improvised versus how much is, you know, really deeply say written for someone to sight read? Because I mean, it's a pretty solid record on both ends, singing and also instrumentally.
I appreciate that, man. I can't say enough about this band. I mean, these guys are, you know, they're in their 20s and 30s, but they're all like, they're old souls, and they've all been playing bluegrass music their whole lives. So like handing out charts to them and like blowing through takes was just second nature to them. We did one rehearsal and half the guys couldn't make it. One of them got sick, and then we had to sub in another guy. So like, half the band like hadn't heard the songs when we sat down on Monday to track the record, but they just got bluegrass and old time running through their veins. So it's like,
wow.
And they're all also like, they all know each other through the jams and the festivals and making records together. So like, there's already rapport and comfort there. And, you know, I'm writing songs in G and C that there's a couple complex chord changes, but it's like, you know, these guys are top notch. And, Jeff Saunders was instrumental in it. He was the bass player. And during that rehearsal, it was because I normally have like a pretty strong producer's voice for my records, and maybe too much so. But for this one, I was able to just let go and say, well, I've never made a bluegrass record before. Like, the power is in y'all's hands. And they all stepped up, and it was very much like a democratic production. And everyone had something to say when they felt it, and we tried it. And I think that's the best way to make records. But with that said, Jeff, you know, if anyone gets the producer tag, it's Jeff, because he was the one that like made the big shots. And he hurt decisiveness while making a record is like one of the most valuable things. And that was Jeff. He was the one that was like, that one chord, let's play it four times as the intro, two times after the second and third chorus, three times at the end. Let's, you know, let's put the solo sections here. Let's play them at this tempo. He was keeping like tempo notes. And he was such a confident leader in the process that honestly, all I had to do there is sit and sing the songs as good as I could. And, you know, I would hear like different melodies, but all of the breaks are improv. I think there's one time where Nate just plays the vocal melody and stuff like that, but all the breaks are improv. You know, I wrote all the songs and I handed out charts, so that made it easier for them. But like I said, both fiddle players and the banjo player, they didn't even have rehearsals going into it.
Wow.
This music is just second nature to them. I mean, there's some of the, you know, Jeff is like Grammy Award winning and plays with Sierra Hall and now Sierra Farrell, and Oliver's played with it. I mean, they've all just like been doing it for so long, like specifically in this genre of music. We made the record in 3 days and did overdubs on the fourth, and then it was done.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask you how it was tracked all together for the most part, as far as the recording.
It was tracked all together. The bass player and Mando were in the same room. And actually the banjo was too, just like farther away in the corner. And the fiddle player was in another room and I was in another room. But it was all going down live and all the vocals are live, except for maybe like one song, I think. Yeah, I think Mama Hen was the one where it was like, that's like a rap song practically. And I was like, I don't know if I can pull this off with y'all like in time right now. Cause it was like like that was an old song, but I hadn't been singing it for a long time. So that was the one where we did the vocals later.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for something like that, you know, I feel like it's, you know, at least from my brain, it's like, man, it's like, I would have to break this up at least from a vocal standpoint. You know what I mean? I feel like that's just so much to do all together. I'm sure there's probably some sessions where, yeah, everything is done at once. You know what I mean? If you have that huge room and, you know, things are broken off in the way that they are, like Abbey Road Studios or something, you know, but yeah, definitely impressive too, you know, and I feel like your singing is just as strong. You know what I mean? As for all your other projects as well. You said it's been a while since you sung that one though, so that was an old song.
Yeah, that one I wrote like 4 years ago. And I mean, it was done on the chords, everything, the arrangement, it was all done, but it's like, it's such a like fast moving, like you're just like spitting out the lyrics and some of them are on like offbeats that when we were rehearsing it, I was like changing chords on like the third beat and stuff that just like didn't make sense for the band. So like for time's sake, yeah, we did the vocals later, but I just had a radio, like a live radio thing, just before this. And I sang it live on the radio there for the first time ever, playing it live. And I've got it now. Like I'm able to like break up the chords in my head and like sing it properly.
Right on. That's great. Well, what are your, as far as like, when it comes to songs and songwriting and whatnot, I feel like it's interesting because I, a good friend of mine down in Paramo, you know, he's like a songwriter. Like he probably has literally hundreds of songs, you know, like written and probably in a very songwriter way, like just a stash of papers in a shoebox. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as for some of your, you know, the songs that you write, I mean, do you just have them in your iPhone, or is it one of those things where it's like you have like a songwriting book as far as when you write out the songs and everything? Well, what's your writing process?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, you know, it's like 6, 7, or 8,000 voice memos on my computer somewhere. And I try to like every year, just like get them all in the computer saved and name them. But, and then there's like notebooks and I try to like every couple months go through all the different notebooks, and I've got like one page is all my like carpentry stuff. And then like the next page is like lyrics. So I just like rip out all the lyrics and try to put them somewhere. But yeah, just like the guy and probably every songwriter that is taking themselves seriously, there's usually like hundreds of songs for every one that actually makes it to a record. And that doesn't mean all those leftovers are bad songs. I just think that like you have to just continue to work that muscle.
Yeah.
Even for this record, my style, and I'd like to get away from this now that we're talking about it, but my style is very much like write 15 or 20 verses and then pick the best three or two and write a bridge or something like that. You know, I was writing songs because I knew the songs that I wanted, but it was only like 8 or 9. So I was writing new songs right up until the tracking day, and even like finishing some on that tracking week. And because I had them, but I wanted, like, Motor was written just before the sessions. I knew I wanted, like, really up-tempo, like, barn burner songs in G. Because that's what bluegrass is. And, like, right. This is a bluegrass record, but it's more of, like, a bluegrass ensemble. Like, there's ballads. And Mama Hen is, like, almost like an old-time song. And some of the songs are kind of, like, honky-tonk sounding. So I wanted at least like 2 or 3 songs on there where it was just like, you know, 170 or 80 beats per minute in G, big harmonies on the chorus, and like, let's let's show the world that we can make a like tried and true bluegrass album.
I was gonna ask, as far as like when you write, what do you feel like is some of your motivation in your songwriting? Because I know for me, you know, when I'm writing a verse or whatnot for a song, I'm working on a project with an engineer, E.L. Summers. Shout out to E.L. Summers in Baltimore, working on a project. And I feel like sometimes, you know, he'll send me the beats or what have you, but sometimes I'll have an idea and write down, but then sometimes I feel like I just kind of have to live life a little bit. So sometimes some of these instrumentals, they just kind of sit, you know, for a couple of days. And when I come back to it, it's like, okay, I think I have the story or the premise or the time, you know. So when it comes to you writing some of these songs, does it come pretty quickly, or do you sometimes have to take some time with it before you start putting pen to paper or finger to iPhone memo?
This one came quickly. You know, I kind of lucked out. I just hold myself in my room for a week and just did it, because we had a deadline. Deadlines and limited options are the best things for, I feel like, for musicians and creative types.
That's just a conversation in itself when it comes to like when you're put in a pressurized position and being able to create, you know, genuinely, you know. I think that's an art.
And this whole thing was, it was as much an experiment as it was an attempt to make a record. And, you know, I think we ended up on the winning side of it, but I walked out of it realizing that, like, you put yourself in a high pressure environment, you actually force yourself to rise to the occasion, as opposed to leaving yourself with unlimited time and unlimited options. You're not that actually can be destructive to an artist. And everyone's different. I mean, people have made great records over the course of years and years. But yeah, I just, you know, like my heroes, it's like I see that they made a record in like a couple days. And so at the beginning of the year, I was like, well, I wonder if I can do that and just sing live vocals and live with it. And but yeah, as far as inspiration, I mean, there's no confusion about the fact that that my girlfriend is a big part of like the lyrical content on this record, Sierra Farrell. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's a great singer.
No, I'll have to check out her stuff.
Check her out, man. She sings her ass off, and she's like doing pop stuff now. It's really good, but awesome. It's not released. She's like very much a roots artist. It's like often the things choose you. And at the time, like we were going through a rough patch. So it was just very natural. Like my emotions were there. So the songs naturally lean that way. But there's songs on there about like just feeling disconnected from society and the technological world. And that's real to me. I think that's real to a lot of people right now. History is often like, I'll take like a day trip and like find a placard and like learn about people from centuries ago. And that shit always inspires me. When I'm on my A game, I'm reading a lot, and like I feel like that stuff kind of subconsciously, naturally just gets into my writing. On this record, it wasn't as much about I have a specific message to say, other than I'm going to make a bluegrass record and I'm going to make it as fast and as raw as possible.
Yeah. It's got to be tough when you're with someone who's also a musician and also writes. So you're like, you never really know how the relationship is going until you hear the song.
Totally.
Like, yeah, like, I'll fuck it up. I need to give her a call. Like, hey, you want to come over and talk about this?
Yeah, it is always touchy. And then if there's a song about someone else, it's all over and it's like causes an argument. And then it's like, yeah.
It was fiction, babe. Right. Oh, really?
Or like the one FU song is like, no, yeah, that is about you. Sorry.
I always laugh about like the Gwen Stefani Don't Speak, you know, like song where it's just like, it's arguably one of their best, like one of her best songs, but it's like written about the guitar player. The guitar player's playing. Yeah, so it's just like, God damn, this is some messy shit, you know? Yeah.
And then Dude is still in the band and has to play it.
Yeah, and they're touring, and everyone's like, play Don't Speak, it's my favorite. You know, it's like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's like Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Don't get worse than that.
Oh man, yeah, most definitely. Tell me about what you're listening to these days when you're not writing songs yourself. Who are you listening to?
Man, lately I've been on a hip hop binge of like 36 Chambers and like,
oh, Wu-Tang stuff. Okay,
Lox and like, I don't know. It's been like when I was like, I don't know, in high school and after high school, like had a big hip hop phase. Mm. And like rarely revisit it, but there was just, I don't know, something in the last couple of weeks just sparked me. I was like, man, how come I haven't listened to hip hop in a while? So I just been like every day listening to 36 Chambers. Nice. And then like, yeah, LOX and Rough Riders. I love all that like 90s hip hop.
Nice.
What's that?
Oh, I was to say a good friend of mine also from Baltimore, D Skills Harris. He's a rapper from Baltimore that I've worked on some projects with him, but him and a rapper and also a renowned poet, Black Shocker, that came out with a project called Liberated Scarfaces. Okay. Phenomenal hip hop album. It's out on bandcamp.com right now.
Black. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. Liberated Scarfaces. And it's a reference to Incarcerated Scarfaces with Raekwon. But Liberate Scarfaces. I think you'll really like it. Yeah, because you're a fan of hip hop. It's one of the best albums I've listened to this year. It's pretty insane. Very talented. Cool. Very talented.
Well, can't wait to listen to that.
Group of folks. So very
cool. Other than that, I've been listening to a lot of like, there's been a lot of friends that have done releases in the last couple of months. So I've just been Chris Casper. Hmm. He's a Philly guy. He's great. He just released something that I listened to. I got a bluegrass record that's like dad's friend from home, you know? Like, got a bluegrass band. It's like a bunch of old guys, but it's cool. And there's like original songs in there. So it's just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, that's funny too, just kind of thinking about like your... You know, like thinking one day it's like you'll end up turning into one of those guys, you know, it's like I think about that too, as far as like me making music, you know, just thinking like 30 years ago, like, man, like, I wonder if I'm still going to be doing this, you know, like I would like to, you know, because it's like it's part of what keeps you your motor running, you know.
Totally.
You know, absolutely.
What kind of music do you make?
I make a few different things. So I, as far as for my guitar playing stuff, it'll be a mix between like jazzy, bluesy influence, and maybe some alternative as well. I released a album earlier this year called Transitions 2. I did most of the composition on it, and I had some players come in and play. So me and my friend Brian Guthrie and a really talented drummer, Ewan Leslie, and about 9 songs. That one I'm really proud of. I think it went really well. And then I do some hip hop too. I did a rap project with D Skills called Sketches of Pain.
Cool.
Which you might like that one too.
Well, I can check it out. Do you go under your name or is it a different name?
J Powell, J. Powell. It's like J. Cool. Cole, but J Powell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is interesting too in itself, because I just had lunch with a friend that my friend that I've known for over 20 years. And we were talking about he's talking to me about rapping, and I was like, man, that was so terrible then. And he was like, man, you like barred somebody up like at lunchtime. I said, I did. He said, yeah, man. He said, that guy was trying to bat you. He said that liar. He had nothing to say. I said, I did do that. I said, well, I am much better than I am. I said, I'm not a battle rapper, but I, when it comes to writing lyrics, I'm much better. But
check you out, man. That's cool.
I appreciate it. I mean, there's a, as far as my last shameless plug, there's a project with EL Summers. We're working on an album. It's called The Fire This Time, and it's very much like, I would say there's a lot of like, are you familiar with Slum Village?
No.
Okay, so like slum village, old school, like the Roots sounding type sounded hip hop. So very, very like more about the vibes, maybe like Tribe Called Quest a little mixed in there. Yeah. So that's coming out November 16th, or that's the projected date. And he's a really talented producer, so really vibey. Really vibey, yeah. Really dope stuff. But
right on.
So man, I'm kind of all over the place. So when it comes to influences, it's really a gumbo situation, I guess, you know. And I've been inspired by this, like I was talking to my friend about this too. I had lunch with him. As far as just like things I've heard on like NPR, like the music segment between one segment to another, and I hear this little snippet and I'm like, that sounds awesome. What is that? Now I have to grab my phone. I'm using SoundHound. I'm pointing at my speaker, you know, and just all types of music that isn't on the radio. That's just, you know, influencing me. So yeah, I tend to lean between hip hop, jazz, alternative, you know, alternative type notion. But yeah, I mean, my wife and I, we binged Nashville for the second time. You know, like, I was like, I love that show. I love the music, you know what I mean? And like the soap opera stuff. I'm just like, this is great. It's great.
Is that T-Bone? Did T-Bone do that stuff?
I think so.
I want to say he did, but I'm not sure.
I think so. But yeah, I'm just like, yeah, just, I love stories that involve music and the things around it and associated with it, you know, obviously for the ones that present it in like the accurate way, but even if it's an entertaining notion.
Yeah, 100%. So, well, that's cool, man. I wasn't sure. I knew you played guitar and like hosted this show, but I didn't realize that you were releasing songs and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I get my fill in every now and again. Cool. I was gonna ask you if you have any new toys since I spoke to you. Any new guitars that you hold all dear? Or?
Yeah, actually, I bought like a 1998 American Strat that I really like.
Mm.
It's like you go into guitar stores and they're just like, they're just so buttery smooth, the Strats when they're set up nice.
Mm.
And I probably got that a year and a half ago.
Mm.
And nice. I've been loving it, man. We've been doing the full band stuff. And we're still playing songs from the Comet, but we're playing these new songs, the ones that sort of lend themselves. But we've been taking like bluegrass standards and turning them into like soul songs and like R&B songs and pop songs and just rearranging them. And but when they're like fast bluegrass songs, we'll turn them into like the gospel train.
Mm.
Which is really interesting. I didn't think it would work, but it works, man. It's like that gospel train is so close to the bluegrass train.
Yeah.
And my usual guys, Justin Turner and Q White, they're gospel guys. They've been playing together for 15 or 20 years or something.
Wow.
So sometimes we're just taking like Bill Monroe songs, actually jacking up the tempo a little bit. Justin does his gospel train, and then we keep the chords and the melody more or less the same.
Hmm.
And then it's like a full gospel band, but it's bluegrass.
Wow.
And it works somehow.
Wow.
It's been fun as hell, but yeah, like doing that guitar is like perfect for like playing the fast choppy gospel stuff for me.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. Wow. And then I don't know how much you can speak to this, but when do you foresee your next album coming out?
I mean, the songs are already there. They're not finished, but they're already there. I don't know if I mentioned this, but the goal for the new year was I'm going to make the rootsiest thing I can do, and then I'm going to come behind it with like the most whatever poppy contemporary thing that I can dream up.
Mm.
Maybe even as far as like sample drums and synth, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like as a roots artist, I might like overestimate the way that I like throw around the pop term, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a group of guys I saw at D's. I don't know if you're familiar with D's. It's like the best bar in Nashville.
Oh, wow.
A couple months ago, and it was just a three piece, but they were just doing kind of groovy, poppy, neo soul stuff. And then I found out they all are like the house band for the studio they started.
Mm.
So yeah, I've been in talks with them, and whenever we can carve out a date, I'm gonna start making a record with them. Maybe we'll have our shit together and be able to do it in 4 days or whatever, like the last record. But either way, the plan is to like not do bluegrass at all and like make a pop record.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of the things I really admire about you is your ability to try new things, either sonically or just from a genre perspective. You know, you say like, oh, like I'm gonna try this or cut this up and do this. You know, I think that's really neat. Just as far as your,
I think it's me and the drummer were just talking about it. It's fun, but it's a mixed blessing in that like there's no niche for it. You know what I mean? And like, you know, we do pretty well, and we play around, and people show up, and we go on little weekend tours and stuff like that. But sometimes I'm like, man, why don't we just be a honky tonk band or just be a bluegrass band and like play those circuits? Our stuff is so wide range that I like, sometimes I wonder if it'll probably take longer for us to find our niche. But with all that said, man, it's like, if you can't keep it fun and fresh for yourself, then how are your fans and the audience going to feel that way? You know?
True.
Like the way for me to stay engaged and involved with it is to keep it fresh. And maybe my attention span, like maybe I'm just not as patient as I should be, but I get sick of myself and my sound and my last record so quickly that I'm like already ready to
get on the next. You're in the future. You're like, I'm working on this new shit.
And like, I should be touring out the bluegrass stuff for a year or two, but I'm like ready to make the pop record. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just like, maybe, you know, if I had a manager or a better business mind, they would say, well, why don't you wait a little while before you do that?
And you're like, why not? Just do it now.
Like, no, I think we should have a record done every year, and to hell with like what genre everyone like says it should or should not be in.
Yeah, especially today too, because it's like, I feel like these algorithms and these streaming services, you know, they just lock people in to the same bullshit or the same songs that they listen to day in, day out. So if you can create music that just has these different sounds and whatnot, you know, I feel like you can go against that algorithm and potentially be exposed to, you know, to new fans or a new crowd base. I'm always discussing that with people as far as like just kind of jumping across the algorithm and really trying to, you know, push the bill there, you know? So I think that's neat.
Yeah, I know. They called that last record a country record. They called, I don't know if you know Katie Pruitt, they called her record, it's like they're calling everything country now.
Yeah, and it's like, no, really, but okay.
Yeah, sure. Like, I'll take some country fans. I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, it's like when some people, they say, oh, it's like, that's an R&B record or that's a soul record. I'm like, it's a little more than that, but okay. It's like, there's a few more adjectives to describe that, but okay.
Right.
Oh, let me ask you, but before I let you go, I was going to say, you know, in California, Southern California, where I'm at, you know, I tend to gravitate towards this record store called Amoeba Records, and this vinyl tape CDs. And it's kind of like my musical Disneyland. What's a place in Nashville that just has like dope vinyls and whatnot that you maybe check out every now and again?
Man, there's a place, I think it's still in Nashville, but it's probably 15 or 20 minutes west of Nashville, called McKay's. And it's just like, it's about as big as a warehouse. And it's like all books on the first floor and all records and tapes on the second floor.
Wow.
And it's all used, you know, so you can find good records for like $5 or $10.
Right.
And it's one of those places where you can bring your shit in and sell it. So like the inventory is just constantly changing, good prices. It's like it's not very pretty. You know what I mean? Like the stuff just comes in on bins, they throw it up on the shelf, a few dollars sometimes. And
I love it.
Yeah, you can find books there for like 25 cents. You can find records for a few dollars. And yeah, that's for me, that's the place to go to. There's a lot of like hip, smaller places on the east side that are great, but they're just smaller and a little like more professional, I guess.
Yeah, and they probably have more recent stuff where it's like, oh,
Yeah, it's not like new releases.
Dua Lipa's album's on
Right.
vinyl. It's like fucking, it's like, why, you know?
Totally.
That's funny. Yeah, man, I just feel like there's such a special thing when you have when you're housing music that is, you know, where it's like there's probably one of these in a 200-mile radius. Like I feel like there's such a special thing with that. I remember coming across a, it was like a no resale vinyl, and it had these Hendrick tracks that are not popular. But I was like, should I buy this? This is only $20, and originally it says no resale, but just they had
Yeah.
it, and like these are songs that he made. So I was like, that's so cool. You know what I
And they
mean?
were
So
unreleased as far as you could tell?
yeah, like
Yeah.
they're like songs for a promotional thing or something, you know. I just love shit like that where it's like, man, like that's the stuff that I want to have a bunch of records, you know, to pass on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's something special about records. I mean, even just the experience of finding them, like the one you're talking about, it's like now you have this like whole time and place and emotion you can connect with that record. Like sometimes I'll just buy records based on they look cool, and then I'll look at the back and there's like a musician or two I recognize, and then when it turns out to be a great record, somehow, I don't know if it's just a thing spinning around. There's just something about records that when that happens, it's like you really connect with it and it becomes like this like special coveted thing.
Yeah,
You
definitely.
know? But
Definitely.
like that doesn't happen on Spotify. Is the emo like the relationship to it is just totally different.
Right. Yeah, because like they have the video thing, and it's like I really don't care about this. Like I'd rather just see like the back of the CD case,
Right.
right?
I've
Tell me
always said that.
who produced it. Tell me who produced
Right.
it.
Spotify should have like interesting factoids about the record and like the musicians and the date and like all that like sort of like documentary type of shit that you want to know.
Exactly, you know, and it's just that's why I love vinyl at times, because it's like I remember I want to say it was Jimmy Blues, Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Blues, and there are these articles that I've never read anywhere before inside that vinyl. You know what I mean? Just talking about Jimi Hendrix, and I was like, this is so interesting, or just like these
Yeah.
photos never really seen before. So
Right.
it's neat when it comes to just when you can kind of give something a little more to your fans that way, you know.
Yeah. And if you find an old one, it's more like a artifact than it is a piece of music. Jimmy's the man.
Well, I'm gonna let you go here, Charlie, but I appreciate you coming back here to the show, man. It's always great to speak with you. It seems like you're doing great. You look healthy. The music sound fucking badass.
I
And
appreciate that, brother. It's good to see you, and I appreciate you having me on again.
of course, man. Of course, anytime. We'll have to check back in with you, especially when the album's out. Pick your brain. So.
Yeah, and yeah, if you're ever in Nashville, hit me up.
Absolutely.
Sounds good, man.
Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. This is Jarrell Powell here from the 440 Guitar Podcast. We'll jam again soon, and have a good day.